Gerritsen and Toth presents The Shift with Jack Johnson on ESPN Kansas City, 1510 AM and 94.5 FM.
Welcome into another edition of The Shift on 94.5 FM and 1510 AM ESPN Kansas City. I'm your host, Jack Johnson, alongside Marco Marquez. It's been a while since we've talked about them, so we will dedicate the first 20 to 30 minutes on the now 18-42 Kansas City Royals. Through the first 60 games, it is the worst stretch. Second worst stretch in franchise history. The first 60 games of the season, the 2023 Royals rank second all time at 18-42. If you watched the game last night, I'm not saying you would be shocked to find out the final score was 9-6, but with the way that game looked going into the bottom of the third, you felt like the Royals were going to steal one down in South Beach. Carlos Hernandez was excellent as the team's opener. You get two runs in the first, two runs in the third. MJ Melendez and Nick Prado both drove in two runs apiece. Prado and Melendez, before the fourth inning, had four hits combined. Bobby Witt Jr. had a hit. Salvador Perez had an RBI single. And the Marlins couldn't touch Carlos Hernandez. But the Marlins are 32-28, and the Royals going into last night were 18-41. Sometimes bad teams, they just can't hold, I wouldn't say a big lead, but a good enough lead for that long. Sometimes it's erased in one inning, sometimes two. And last night, after leading 4-0, the Royals didn't have a lead two innings later. Now, to me, it felt like this was the perfect opportunity for the Royals to steal one in Miami. I actually liked the pitching matchup going into it. I love Carlos Hernandez as the opener. I had liked what I'd seen from Mike Myers in his first two bulk outings as a Royals pitcher. Actually, three, now that I think about it, because he had one against Detroit, one against St. Louis in the near-perfect game, and then he was going to be the bulk pitcher last night against the Marlins. But the Marlins just tagged Myers. And he never had anything that missed a barrel. As he gives up six runs, nine hits in just three innings. Josh Staumont, he gives up two runs in one inning, struck out one, walked none. And Nick Whitgren had two perfect innings. Offensively, not bad at all from the Kansas City Royals. Pitching-wise, pretty bad. Two of the guys, at least, pretty bad for the Royals. But I think, to me, the most frustrating part about being 18-42 is not so much the record alone, right? I think that's in its own category here. Not to use a pun, but it is in its own ballpark. When you're this bad, record-wise, sometimes you just become numb to it. I look at the Royals' record and go, okay, it is really bad. It's the second worst in baseball, and if it weren't for the Oakland A's being a Triple-A team, who, might I add, took two of three from the Royals in Kansas City, the Royals would be the worst team in baseball. Record-wise, most likely numbers-wise. Now, this Royals team, I do believe, is a lot better than their record shows, and that's not saying much when you think about it. I'm not saying they're a 500 team, but they're not 18-42 bad. And I'm not going to make excuses for them. You are what your record says. But it does feel like this team has more talent than some really bad Royals teams in the past. When I think about the 04 Royals, the 05 Royals, the 08 Royals, the 2018 Royals, the 2019 Royals, this team had more talent than all of those. I mean, they really do. And that, to me, is a frustrating aspect of it, because I really did believe that this team was built to win about 70 to 75 games. I thought they were going to take a significant jump from last year. We just haven't seen it in the first 3 months of the season. They were really good in spring training, for the most part stayed healthy, and it hasn't worked out. When the pitching was good in April, the hitting was atrocious. When the hitting got good in May, the pitching wasn't very good. Now injuries have piled up. Guys are underperforming. I mean, stars for your team are underperforming. That's why they're 18-42. They're 18-42 because the pitching is bad. Bobby Witt Jr. has taken a big step backward, I would believe. I mean, you can point out home runs, stolen bases, and I do believe Bobby Witt Jr., even slumping, not having the best year, is still a very good player. But I think with the pressure that he is taking on, he's got to be better than what he is. That's just a fact here, especially with how good players are in Major League Baseball. Now, I mean, you look at perennial all-stars. Like Bobby Witt Jr., unless something drastically changes in the next month, he's not making an all-star game. Maybe that's not the expectation, but this is his second full year in the big league level. And for the amount of weight that us in Kansas City put on him, you have to start seeing some of the big-time results. Because for this team to take off, and we've seen it from time to time, there haven't been many wins this year, but 18 wins. In the comforting wins, I would say, the impressive wins, the confidence-building wins, it's usually because Bobby Witt Jr., Vinny Pasquantino, MJ Melendez, Nick Prado, Michael Massey, Michael Garcia, all those guys play really well. Now, you can't get that all the time, but sometimes you wish that it happened more than just once a week, because that's the way it's felt a lot of this season. A really good game followed up by four or five bad ones. Now, I want to add an extra element into why this team has been infuriating to watch at times. At times, you know, you can be a realist and go, they were never in any realm of competition. They didn't spend any money in the offseason. Their most expensive contract was Jordan Lyles, a pitcher they haven't won a game with when he's on the mound yet. And it's June 6th. That was their most expensive deal. There was not a significant amount of money put into the 2023 Royals. And that has gotten a lot of the fan base to turn on John Sherman, to turn on J.J. Piccolo, because a lot of Royals fans see what happens around baseball and sees bad teams spending and seeing how it works out. Now, I have had my mind changed from time to time. I really have. I've changed my mind on how a small market team can build. You look at the Baltimore Orioles. They have one of the best records in baseball because they've drafted unbelievably well. They have found talent in organizations where they'd given up on that player. They know how to work with a lot of the players on their team. They haven't missed, really, on any draft pick in their rebuild years. You go to Texas, second best record in Major League Baseball. Chris Young, former Royal, acting general manager, just went all in. I mean, the Rangers were a bad team 2 years ago. They were bad last year. But they fixed their problems by spending a lot of money. Now, I understand Texas is in a different ballpark than Kansas City. They are in a different world than the Kansas City Royals. But they fixed their losing by spending. They signed, right now, the best duo up the middle in baseball. Corey Seager, Marcus Semien. Not defensively, and it's not going to be like that forever, but offensively, unbelievably terrorizing in the heart of that lineup. Then they have, in their rotation, Andrew Heaney, spent money to get him. Nathan Eovaldi, been the best pitcher in baseball over the last month and a half. Jacob deGrom just went on the 60-day injured list. He'll be back in July, I believe it is. But Jacob deGrom hasn't even been out there that much. And it's still a team that is second best in baseball. Has a very good chance to take the AL West crown from the Houston Astros because they were aggressive in spending. That is one way to fix your problems. Then you could be the Tampa Bay Rays. You never spend. The Rays have one of the lowest payrolls in baseball, yet have the best record. Right? You can be the Tampa Bay Rays, and I once thought that was the best way to go about it. That using the Rays model is the perfect scenario for the Royals. You don't need to spend. You can find a lot of talent and coach that talent to become elite. At the same time, the Rays in this golden era of Tampa Bay baseball, they still haven't won a World Series. So is it a model that's good enough? Was Moneyball in Oakland ever good enough to win a World Series? That is obviously the goal of every single team. But for the Royals, it's about picking a path. And I think those are the three most likely options. Then there's a fourth one, actually, I want to add in here. And I'm going off the top of my head here. I look at the Miami Marlins. The Miami Marlins, by all accounts, are not a fantastic baseball team, but they're 33-28 in second place in the NL East. Skip Schumacher, first year as a manager, might I add. He didn't coach any other major league team prior to this stint. It's his first year as a manager. But the Marlins went out, and they were aggressive in the offseason. They had faith in the guys they had. Now, it certainly helps when you've got Edward Cabrera in your rotation, the Royals will see tomorrow night. It helps when you have Jesus Luzardo. It helps when you have Jazz Chisholm, when you trade for Luis Arraez. And then you have good pieces like Jesus Sanchez, Garrett Cooper. You bring in some experience like Joey Wendell and Yuli Gurriel. John Birdie, also experienced. And the Marlins team doesn't jump out at the page. They're five games over 500. So there's four outlets the Royals can pick. There's four. And last night, as Drew Waters is dropping a pop-up in the outfield, and over the last week they've been running to outs in the base path, just making, as Royals Farm Report would put it out, little league mistakes. If you lose games at the big league level, you damn well better be competitive and respecting the game. Last night, I can't say that was respecting the game for the Royals. That was ugly. That was really, really ugly. And it's because they're not anywhere near where a winning baseball team is. You look around baseball, the way the Royals have competed against teams who have winning records, it ain't close. So now I sit here, I talk about this team, and I'm sure conversations have been had by J.J. Piccolo and John Sherman. You got to pick a damn path. Of those four, how you want to compete in 2024, you got to pick one of those. And you have to vocally express that to the fan base. Because a lot of the fan base, the reason Kauffman Stadium is so empty, the reason the fan base is turning on John Sherman, turning on J.J. Piccolo, and in fact, I even know fans that are turning on Matt Quatrero 60 games into his tenure. It's because they're tired of hearing and seeing the same BS. They're tired of seeing a team and a front office say, we're rebuilding, we believe in our guys, and that team go out and post the second worst record in franchise history through 60 games. And you got to wake up at some point. You're in year five of a rebuild, year six of a rebuild, and this is where you're at. Now, I've said this before, and I'm going to stay pretty consistent with it. I believe there was zero progress made. Zero. From 2018 to 2022, nothing was achieved. Nothing for a future Royals contending team was achieved. This is now back at the basement. You have to work your way back up. So why I say you have to pick a path and be vocal about it is so that the fan base can get an understanding of how you're going to do things. Right? John Sherman comes in, buys the team from Glass, and says, we want to be aggressive. We want to spend money. And John Sherman came from an organization like Cleveland where, honestly, spending was not a part of their vocabulary. They drafted incredibly well, scouted incredibly well, but when their big player was up for contract, they didn't give him that contract. They traded that player. Now they got a lot of talent in return. It's why Cleveland has had the best pitching staff in baseball, feels like, for the last half decade. And they've got stars like Jose Ramirez. Now they have stars like Stephen Kwan, at least Cleveland stars. Andres Jimenez and Ahmed Rosario, I know they haven't been the best players like they were last year, but still I think are going to turn it on of late. A great bullpen. And Terry Francona has been a great manager for Cleveland. So John Sherman came from that. And to me, it felt like that's a pretty good hire. A guy that cares about Kansas City, cares about the Royals, wants to be aggressive. Because the one thing Glass never did was spend a lot of money. And when the Royals won a World Series without spending a big amount of money, it set a precedent for the next decade of you can win the World Series without spending. But John Sherman, at least, it felt like that was going to be the difference. That in the typical offseason, you will see the Royals make some pretty big acquisitions and spend and give a 2 or 3 year deal. And at least I thought that. Because, yes, this is an evaluation year. Yes, you need to find out what Bobby Witt Jr. is, what Michael Massey is, what Edward Olivares is, Kyle Isbell, Drew Waters. You need to find out who these guys are. At the same time, you got to put a competitive team on the field. That should be step one. You can evaluate, but you got to give these guys a chance to even compete. Right? Are you really evaluating a player truly when they're 18 and 42 and this is how the majority of their losses go? Like, I feel like if the Royals were going to truly evaluate what all these guys had, now, there are a couple ways to go about it, right? You can throw them into a lineup and say, go do it, which is what they're doing now. And I still would say I'm on board with it. But I think pitching-wise, there was never an idea of being competitive. There was never an inkling of saying that rotation was going to compete at the major league level. There was zero chance that was going to happen. And that, maybe to me, is the toughest pill to swallow. This rotation should be a lot farther along than the lineup. This rotation should be a lot better. Brady Singer can't be posting a 6.5 ERA. Daniel Lynch can't be giving up 5 runs in the first inning anymore. Chris Bubich was on his way, but of course, baseball happens, and you have Tommy John. Injuries can happen to a starting pitcher. Brad Keller can't be walking 8 guys in an outing. Jordan Lyles should have a win at this point. Now, Zach Greinke, at 40 years old, can't be your number one. There was never an ounce of competitiveness from the front office in trying to build a rotation, or a bullpen for that matter. And Brian Sweeney, as a guy coming from Cleveland, right? You have Zach Bove coming from Minnesota. These are guys that have been from successful organizations, know how to work with pitching. And this is telling me some of these guys are lost causes. If they can't work with some of the best pitching coaches, the pitching minds in baseball, then I don't know what more you want to see. And going into 2024, right, when you look at the 2023 Royals, they are going to lose somewhere in the ballpark of 95 to 100 games. Maybe more than that if you're going to be more on the pessimistic side. What I think every fan would appreciate, though, is coming out and saying what the goal is, which they've tried to do a couple of times, right? Evaluation year, then we're going to go from there and build. It's the age-old saying of, well, that's exactly what the 2012-2013 Royals did. They evaluated their players, then they spent money in 13, spent money in 14, spent money in 15, then bottomed out, right? But for the 2024 Royals, what really is the message, right? Which route do you pick? You can't really go the Orioles until you have a top 5 farm system in baseball, which that takes about 2 or 3 years to build. And that's if you hit on a lot of picks, which the Royals have proven they can't hit on many of them. Right? Baltimore just continues to pump out top 100 prospects. And they traded away guys with any sort of value and got top prospects back in return. That was Baltimore's path. And Baltimore's path has built them in a contending way that is sustainable for 5 to 10 years. I can't confirm if they're going to win a World Series or not, but they're going to put themselves in a really good spot to compete in the toughest division in baseball. Right, everybody in the AL East is above 500. And the Orioles have the second best record in baseball. That's tough to do. The Royals are in the worst record or worst division in baseball. Terrible teams in the American League Central. The Twins can win this division under 500. I'm convinced of it. So you don't need to go as far as the Orioles, be as good as the Orioles, but if that's the path you want to go, well, then gear up, buckle up for a couple of years like this. Because the only way you get those top 100 prospects flooding in is picking 1 and 2 every single year. And that's not even a guarantee. So that's one route. John Sherman and the Royals could go maybe the Texas route. Not as severe, spending $500 million on 3 players, but being very aggressive. Because what Texas did was they looked at the landscape of the Rangers, being 65 and 97, losing 90-plus games every year, and going, how do we fix it? We don't want to wait around on if draft picks are going to pan out. We're going to go spend money on guys we know are going to be good. And we're going to outbid these other teams. They rebuilt their entire rotation with outside help. And that, to me, should be the message for the Royals going into the offseason. And not Jordan Lyles reincarnated on a 2-year, $18 million deal. You want to add some serious talent to your rotation, you go give somebody a 3- or 4-year deal. And I guarantee you, the rotation will look a lot better than it does right now. And I know that's not saying much. But that's another route the Royals can go in 2024. You want to evaluate this lineup? Give them some pitching depth, man. Yeah, they can't be relying on a bullpen start every fourth or fifth day. That's just not likely. That's not a way to win baseball games. And a part of this evaluation process is giving these guys confidence, winning baseball games. They won 18 of them, and it's June 6th. So, option number two, spend money. Spend a lot of it. Do something the Royals have never done. 3, 4, 5 multi-year deals and filling holes in the team with guys that have proven they've done it before. It's kind of what Miami did. Felt like they needed a star leadoff hitter, got that. Now they had a guy like Pablo Lopez to trade, but the Royals have to be aggressive on that front. Option number three, being the Rays. Right, and that feels like, and I'll stand by, that's the most likely option and probably the most enticing to the Royals front office. But that's also being insanely consistent and solid and productive at finding those players. That's what the Rays do. They have coaches top to bottom, from the minor leagues to the big leagues, in finding that talent. And here's another thing to factor in. The Rays have a top 5 system in baseball. So they pump out talent. They get these young guys, and then they want to trade a guy, they can trade him and get more talent in return. And just because you get Mac Quatreau doesn't mean you have to go the Rays route. But a part of being really good with the Rays, it's not just finding bargain bin guys. No, the Rays don't have 9 guys that nobody's ever heard of. They've got stars. Wander Franco is a star. Right? I think Taj Bradley, their top prospect from this year, going to be a star. You know, Peter Fairbanks, going to be a star. He's already proven in the postseason he can be a star. Tyler Glass, now getting him a few years back. I know he's battled injuries, but that's a guy that can be a star. The Royals don't have that. And option number four, not saying the Marlins are going to make the postseason, but for the 2024 Royals, this would be a fine lineup to go with. Right coaching, right development, and guys to build around. And you're hoping that some of your current guys, Bobby Witt Jr., Vinny Pasquantino, MJ Melendez, they can turn in to guys like what the Marlins have. The Marlins aren't sexy. They're not a super fun team to watch, but in Miami right now, 5 games over .500, competing through June, it's what every Royals fan wanted this year. Be fun into the summer. They're just not. It's a pain to watch, and I think right now for a lot of fans, you don't want to hear J.J. Piccolo or John Sherman say, you know, this is a big process, and you got to find out what you have in some guys, and we have to hit on draft picks. That's, we're all fully aware of that. And I will say, first and foremost, I think J.J. Piccolo needs a little bit longer than 60 games as the acting general manager, right? He needs money, and we need to find out what he can do at a deadline when it's just him making the calls. We need to find out what he can do in a full offseason with him making the calls. I know technically this first year was his chance to make some moves, but they felt like the goal was to get a lot of these guys as many at-bats, as many innings as possible. But now baseball is showing you you can win in different ways and not win a World Series. The Royals are, as we all know, far removed from being able to compete for that. But it's also about trying to contend, right? Trying to contend, help out your current players. I will be completely honest, and this is not a hot take by any stretch. The Royals have not done their young hitters any favors by giving them the pitching rotation they currently possess or the bullpen they have. They are not doing them any favors, and that can stunt a player's growth. When you're not playing in meaningful games, well, then how do you know if they can play in them? And then can you properly evaluate a certain player? And last year, I'm not saying that this player's become an absolute stud or a superstar. It's still a small sample size, but like the Royals having Brent Rooker last year. Just got rid of him, didn't want him anymore. A's picked him up, but he was one of the best hitters in baseball in April and carried that into May. And the A's can flip him for a guy now. The A's can flip Brent Rooker for a prospect at the deadline. Wasn't even possible for the Royals last year. Wouldn't have been possible for the Royals this year. So it's all about finding your path. It really is. There is a path you have to choose, and I've always believed that a front office and an owner need to be very vocal about it. Why people turn on Dayton Moore so quickly after the World Series years is he was a great guy, but a lot of the stuff that you were fed as a fan is, well, we believe we're a contending team. We're going to compete this year, and they weren't. They didn't have a team to compete in. I thought J.D. Picole was very honest. They never went out there in the fall of 2022 and said, you know, we're going to be a contending team next year. We're going to compete for a wild card spot. They were very open about being an evaluating team. They needed to see what they had. And a lot of us understood that meant losing baseball. I think not losing to this magnitude or being out of it by the end of April. But we knew this was not going to result in a postseason appearance. Now I feel like, though, you look at the state of the American League Central. There's not a single good team in that division. So you don't really need to rebuild for 4 or 5 years to compete for a postseason spot. You need a competitive team. Spending money in free agency, making trades can do that, being transactional, all that good stuff. You can be a team that can compete, and you just have to pick as to how you get there. I will be bluntly honest here. I don't trust the Royals scouting department at all. At all. I don't trust them in the upcoming draft. I certainly don't trust them in the one after that. We felt like back in 2018, that was the hit or miss class for Dayton Moore. The Royals had 2 first-round picks, had a couple in the second, compensatory picks from Lorenzo Cain and Mike Moustakas and Eric Hosmer. And I think you could make a very strong case they didn't hit on any of them. Not a single one. Not on Singer, not on Lynch, not on Bubich, not on Kowar. And even if these guys turn out to be pretty decent this year, it's not what you expected from them. Some of those guys need to be aces. They haven't been. They haven't been healthy. They haven't been good. They've put up bad numbers. And we're in year 3 or 4, some of these guys' big league careers. That's a problem. Ace Lacy was soon to be your surefire number one of a postseason Royals team. Nobody even knows where the hell he is right now. I think he's going to be playing with the surprise Royals, working back from a back injury. But that's a guy you can't miss on. You just can't. And I liked the pick at the time, but clearly it hasn't worked out. To this point, not going to completely punt on it yet. But man, you look around baseball, guys being able to promote draft picks from last year already to Double A. I mean, Gavin Cross, last year's first-round pick. He's striking out over 30% of the time. His OBP is barely over 300. He's hitting a lot of home runs. This is the college hitter we're talking about in high A. It shouldn't take you that long to be moving on up to Double A. Supposed to be a fast riser, which is why you took a college bat. I like a lot of guys in the upcoming draft, but I mean, history kind of makes you be pessimistic at times. Why do I believe the next guy is going to turn things around? And I'm still thinking that Bobby Witt Jr. is going to be a star, a multiple-time All-Star. But does it not sting a little bit when you see Adley Rutschman in the Orioles? Second best record in baseball. Now, the Royals never could have gotten Adley Rutschman because he was taken 1-1. Bobby Witt Jr. was number two. I think there's a lot of good things that Bobby Witt Jr. does that Adley Rutschman simply can't. But Adley Rutschman's probably going to be an All-Star again. And Bobby Witt Jr., I don't think this year is going to be one. And Adley Rutschman is right now top three catcher in baseball. And I can't say Bobby Witt Jr. right now is a top three shortstop in baseball. It's just the way things have gone. And I think every Royals fan just wants that one pick, those two picks to go, they're going to be stars. They're going to be on the cover of MLB The Show. They're going to be the guy that MLB Network's always talking about. When a big game's on FS1 or ESPN, that player's on the front. Right next to Yordan Alvarez of the Astros. Or Mike Trout of the Angels. You just want that. It hasn't been possible. So can you expect the Royals rebuild to go perfectly when the first round picks are missing, the second round picks are missing? No. Can you expect the scouting or player evaluation department to work out when they're giving money to guys like Jordan Lyles? I don't know. It's a tough spot to be in, and I'm not saying that last night put me over the edge. It may sound like it. But I just want to know direction. I'm already looking to this offseason at players they could bring in. But I want to see some aggressiveness. I want to see a Royals offseason that we've never seen before. I want to see some of these guys you believe in, the core you believe in, and give them some help. The rotation, now you look at Brady Singer and Daniel Lynch in it right now, giving them Zach Greinke, as good as he's been, and Jordan Lyles and Brad Keller as their counterparts, that's not giving them help. And the bullpen, Carlos Hernandez thing has been one of the better stars of that bullpen, alongside Aroldis Chapman, Barlow, and Taylor Clark. The rest of those guys, woof. I mean, woof. Offensively in that lineup, just because you brought in Franmil Reyes on a minor league deal and Matt Duffy and Jackie Bradley, that's not giving the lineup any protection. I want to see some gambles. I really do. You know, I know at times that I've said, hey, you got to wait to spend till you're ready to compete. Sometimes it doesn't work out. But I think at this point, with where you're at, and maybe trying to take a step further into the rebuild, it's about trying to compete, showing your fan base you're wanting to compete. I got behind the Royals' 2021 offseason, trading for Andrew Benintendi, signing Mike Minor, signing Carlos Santana. I got behind it because it was showing that the Royals wanted to compete. They wanted to try to go out there and win games. And you know what? That Royals team won 74. Not great by any stretch. That's not something to hang your hat on. But that's one of the better years we had seen in the last five or six. And the Royals went back to, we got to rebuild again. We just don't have the talent there. I want to see something different. If John Sherman says he wants to spend money, then damn it, spend money. Don't need to give the $500 million to three players. Not saying that's the exact model to use with Texas. But a part of this evaluation, and maybe that is going to be the message. Maybe I'm coming down too hard on them and saying, you know, tell me what you're going to do now. Maybe they're already working on that. Or they need to find a legitimate center fielder for years to come. Not bank on Drew Waters or Kyle Lisbell. Maybe it's finding a corner outfielder. Finding a number one in the rotation. Finding a number two. Not just finding minor league deal guys and putting them in the lineup and expecting everybody to improve. You got to pick your core guys you want to roll with and help them out by giving them major league talent. You know, guys on 2 or 3 year deals. That has to be the message in the offseason. If the Royals were in the AL East and they were 35 games behind first place, Tampa Bay, then yeah, I'd say let's just try to rebuild here. The Royals are in a bad division, man. It could take a really good offseason. They could be competing well into September. It really can happen like that. That's how bad this division is. So, pick your path. Be vocal about that path. Find guys that you feel like can be immediate contributors. Do not be afraid to make a mistake. I know that in the moment, giving a big contract to a player and it not working out is always going to come back on the front office, right? And it should. You made the move. You signed the player. But sometimes never making the move can be worse. You know, going 5, 6, 7 years without making a big move, that can be a lot worse. And especially when the guys you have on the field aren't panning out. I mean, there is a number of Royals players right now that just simply aren't going to be panning out. But you still give them the at-bats because no matter what happens this year, it is the evaluation year. But 2024, I don't think you're going to be seeing this again. You can't see this same production, this same record, this time next year. You got to have a significant jump forward. I want to give this front office time. I want to give John Sherman at least one more offseason before I would be very open to that criticism. Because maybe they're all just waiting for the official word of going, okay, these guys are ready to go. Now let's give them help. I'm very curious to what happens at this deadline, who they can trade, who they can get for him. But the Royals got to start somewhere. Pick a path, be vocal. That's my message to them. Marco, before we head to break, I'm not going to get up in arms anymore about this current team, their record. The 60 games in, 18 wins, they're bad. They're not a good baseball team. It's not going to get a lot better from this point on. But to me, I want to see the cutthroat. I want to see the cutthroat. I want to see aggressiveness. I want to see transactional. And it's going to start as early as this deadline. And I want to see J.D. Bacola, John Sherman be vocal and stand by it, right? If you're going to spend, spend. If you're going to go out and give big-time contracts to players, give them to those players. That's kind of where I'm at right now at the state of the Royals organization, having a bottom-five system in baseball and a bottom-five team at the major league level.
Yeah, absolutely. And with the trade deadline coming up, that'll start to give us an idea of what direction the Royals are going to lean towards, considering that's such a big window, and unfortunately has been a popular thing for Royals fans to keep their eyes on for several years now, as you ran through. It's weird. It's funny. It's weird. This team is hard but yet easy to analyze, I guess, or kind of understand they are. It's just when you watch this team, you don't think that they should be the second worst Royals team through 60 games.
Yeah.
That to me is a stat that doesn't tell what's on the field, but At the same time, I guess if you focus on the pitching of this team, then maybe it's not too much of a surprise for you. But when you told me that they were 18-42, I don't know why, but I was a little bit like, ah, oh, damn, they haven't even gotten to 20 wins yet.
No.
And that is concerning. That's why they are where they at in Royals history, like this. Yeah, to me, the Royals are we're not going to see anything different about this team unless they make some changes to the roster that would have to be roster changes through the lineup and through the rotation, bullpen, all areas. If they just make some changes through the bullpen, then I mean, you did something, but we'll see how that is as the rest of the season goes on. But for me right now, I enjoy watching the offense of this team more so than defense, which isn't really a big statement or anything. But if I could get an alert to tune in to bottom or top inning, wherever the Royals are batting at in the game, then I would tune in. I would tune in for those half innings.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's, I guess back to you would be, which of those four roadmaps that you put out there for the Royals, which one would you more lean towards, and how would you get the ball rolling on that one?
You know, I think of the three options that I laid out, the realistic ones. I think the most unrealistic is the Texas route of spending $500 million on, you know, three guys.
Right, right.
The most likely for next year is what Miami did. At the same time, we can't undersell what Miami's done with their rotation. I mean, Miami has legitimate guys in their rotation.
Yeah.
I mean, Braxton Garrett wasn't phenomenal last night. But here's the thing. Braxton Garrett gave up four runs in the first two innings, lights out the next three. Got him through five, good enough. Edward Cabrera has a 95-mile-an-hour circle change. Jesus Luzardo, the Royals see him tonight, 101. Mm-hmm. You know, that's a starting pitcher, 101. Those are guys they've built around. But then offensively, they just were aggressive. They were transactional. They went out and got guys, and they also found guys like Jazz Chisholm, brought him up through the system. They found guys like Jesus Sanchez. You build around that, and you could be five games over 500, 60 games in, 61 games in. So Miami feels like the best option, and I think this fan base would be just fine with that, more than fine. If the Royals were five games over 500 on June 5th next year, you would be celebrating. You'd be saying Matt Cotrero is the manager of the year, and I don't want to fire anybody for what the Royals have done this year, but I got to see more motivation now. I got to see a team, a front office be more aggressive, because what I've seen Texas do, that's incredibly fun. Texas lost 90-plus games last year, second-best record in baseball. Spending can win you a lot of games. You can buy guys that will win you games, and that's fun to me. That's fun to me to know that really in the AL Central, it's not a lost cause. The Royals could be aggressive and be in first place. They could, if they had, you know, five, six, seven more guys, it's a lot to list there. But you think about it, where they are. They're this bad, 18-42. They're not even 15 games back at first place. That's absurd to me. Like, it would take two really good weeks and the Central just playing as they are right now, and the Royals would be in the hunt. They're not going to do that. But it should show you that, man, if we're just more aggressive than we ever have been with this team, you could have a team that can make the postseason. You don't have to look to the future and go, well, they'll contend in 2027. Why not be aggressive, spend money, and move up that timeline a little bit? Why not?
Yeah. And okay, so I'll ask you this. So obviously the Royals are in an overhaul throughout every part of their system that we just saw through this offseason, new regime. I wouldn't say deplete your minor league, but do you start trading the guys that are hot right now that are in your system? Because what we just talked about, these are guys that were found through the scouting department that you and I both don't think is a great staff from what we've seen over the last few years with Royals players who have been brought up. Do you just start trading away your farm, the hot pieces in your farm system, and see what you can get out of them? And then, of course, I guess you try to advance that overhaul instead of having the hit on drafts like the Orioles did.
Yeah.
Do you start trading out the guys that you've already, that unfortunately are in your system and haven't been in your system for too long, but at the same time, they're not guys that you may want if you're the new Royals management.
Yeah, the reality with this Royals system right now is that I look top to bottom. There's maybe one guy, and I wouldn't say one guy even. I can't say right now above High A, there's a guy that is a legitimate big league all-star, and that's problematic. Because a lot of teams out there in baseball, you know, I would say maybe the exception of like Oakland, which isn't great company, but you have to have guys in your system that they can't miss. And in my lifetime, actually, I'm not going to say my lifetime, the last 5 to 10 years, the Royals have had one guy that baseball scouts said he's can't miss. He is a star, going to be a star. You don't have to worry about him. Mm-hmm. He's going to be good. It was Bobby Witt Jr. Yeah. And I can always play into the sophomore slump. It's possible he's having a little bit of the sophomore slump right now. There's also a scary possibility. This is who he is, right? He's always going to have the swing and miss. He's never going to be an on-base guy. That's just baseball, right? Some guys can't change their ways. But the way the Royals have to change their system is they got to start. Obviously, you got to hit on guys. You have to hit in the international scouting area there. You have to hit on first-round guys. Like, that's the big key here. The Royals' first-round picks are not just fringe minor leaguers or fringe major leaguers, excuse me. They're guys that don't even make it to the big league level. That's a problem. They're having guys have a good year and then bottom out the next year. It happens way too often. And yeah. That's the scary thing right now is, well, can you trust the scouting department? Just because you hit on it back in 2008, 9, and 10, you built a World Series winning team, which is, well, you, flags fly forever. You can never take that away. It doesn't give you a reason to just trust those guys over and over again. Trusting the scouting department to churn out talent, because the reality is they haven't. And the scary reality is there is a real world out there, a real world possibility. Everybody on this major league team and everybody in the minor league system are not going to be good enough. That is a real world possibility, because baseball is baseball. You can't count on anything. You can't bank on anything. And the fear to me is that I look around baseball right now. I look at teams that are bad, right? Just not very good teams. Or Detroit, as bad as they are, they've gotten more out of what their picks have given them. You know, guys that you never really thought were going to amount to much, they've gotten more.
Their
out of
first round pick from that Bobby Witt draft is hitting.
Yeah, and I mean, it's Spencer Torkelson. It's he's not better, I don't think, than Bobby Witt Jr. Right. But the Tigers are in a different spot right now in the Royals. It's not a spot I envy to be in, but they're competing in a very bad Central Division, and the Royals just aren't. And I hate to say that there's not much reinforcement. I'd like to say Frank Mozzicato is going to be that guy, that ace, who right now he's on the 7-day IL because he collided with a teammate in practice. This feels like that's the way the Royals season's gone, hoping that was just a scary situation. He'll be back on the mound soon, but that's a 19-year-old, soon to be 20, I believe, dominating, dominating in high A, or low A, I think, excuse me. He's soon to be in high A. But I kind of just want one of those guys, just one to start with, that they can breeze through the farm system, right? Gavin Cross, college hitter, 21 years old. You know, it's unrealistic to think he would have debuted this year by any stretch, but maybe by the end of the year, tearing it up in double A, goes into spring training next year, hits his ass off, and maybe has the first month in triple A, and then boom, you have a starting major leaguer at 23 years old and under club control for the next 5 to 6 years. Like, that's what you hope for. It doesn't happen at all. It never does. And that's why I hate that with this team, as bad as they've been, as much young talent as we like to believe they have, there's not much reinforcement behind them. There's not many guys you can turn to. And the biggest problem is there's no pitching depth at all. I mean, at all above high A. Zero. I'd like to say that, you know, Alec Marsh can turn things around. I like what I've seen from Noah Cameron, but he just started making, you know, his first couple outing. He just started. He had two starts, I think, in Northwest Arkansas. Anthony Veneziano, been lit up in AAA. Like, there's,
I haven't heard that name in a long time. Wow.
Yeah, I mean, it's just the fear is there too many fringe guys? Guys that can just make it to the big league level. You need game changers. Can't say there's that many of them, right now at least. I'm hoping that in low A and high A, you know, when you have the Frank Mozzicatos, the Ben Kudernas, Carter Jensen, you know, Gavin Cross, you're hoping those guys can be the next wave. But I just don't want to have to see the bad slash lines, the strikeout percentage north of 30. You know, I don't want to see a second-round pick hitting 185 in low A. Nobody does. And then you look around baseball where the great teams, right, their top prospects just flying through the ranks. Their top 100 guys. The Royals barely have any. I think they have one that's Gavin Cross, and he's like bottom 30 in the top 100. Like, that's problematic, especially with where you're at. If the Royals were 18-42 and they had a top five system in baseball, I'd be dancing on the ceiling, to quote Lionel Richie. I mean, it would be a much more stomach. I don't know. I could stomach it a lot better. I could swallow that tough pill if the Royals had a lot of reinforcement coming. They don't. So it begs the question, do you go into this offseason and go, all right, in the time that we're trying to rebuild this farm system, how about we compete? How about we spend money? Right? Because nothing stops you from spending money and drafting well, right? You can draft well and spend money. You can do two at the same time. You don't need to pick your poison and go, well, if we spend a lot of money here, we're just never going to draft. You can draft well. You can scout well. It's about finding the right guys, the best eye, can find talent from rounds 1 through 10. I mean, big-time major league talent. It's why you look at guys like Shane Bieber in Cleveland. He wasn't a top 10 pick. He wasn't a first-round pick, a second-round pick. He's like the sixth. What's even more impressive, the Royals have done this before. Vinny Pasquantino was a ninth-round pick. He's arguably your best hitter in the lineup. Like, that, to me, is what you look for all the time, finding these talented guys. Now, one guy I think the Royals might have hit on, still too early to tell, but Javier Vaz, center fielder out of Vanderbilt, I think a 20-plus round pick. He's hitting his ass off right now, probably going to be promoted to Double-A here pretty soon. That's what you want to see, because then it takes pressure off the first-round picks, but at the same time, your first-round picks, they got to hit. At this point in time, they got to hit. I thought back then, in 2018, they had to hit. They didn't. They didn't hit on their first-round picks. Now, I'd like to say Brady Singer can still turn things around, fix things, but folks, he debuted in 2020. It's 2023. 3 years. In fact, 4 years, if you want to count the COVID year. 4 years. Big league year number four. He was a college pitcher. You know, you can expect that, the struggles, and maybe year four of a guy that debuted at 20. He's not getting any younger. He's still a young pitcher, but those are the guys you need to see consistently take next step forward when you're playing like this. When you're 18 and 42, you got to build on something. The only guy right now I'm going, wow, he's really improved. Nick Prado, one of them. But you're still seeing the struggles from MJ Melendez. Maybe a sophomore slump there. Seeing the struggles from Bobby Witt Jr. Hell, seeing the struggles from Vinny Pasquantino. But I want to see this front office. I know we spent the entire show talking about it, and we likely won't talk about the Royals for the rest of the week. But what I want to see is maybe the expression and the following up of being aggressive. I want to see that aggressiveness in this fall of 2023. If that farm system is still depleted, which one pick's not going to, a couple of picks aren't going to move it from bottom five to top five, right? It's going to take some time. But I would love to see the words be backed up. And I promise you, this fan base, it'll support it. If this front office goes out and adds five, six, seven guys, not all the big-time contracts, but guys you know, guys that will turn in good numbers this year, and they could do the same for the Royals next year. You do that, fans are going to show up. Because winning cures everything. You want to help out these young guys next year? That's not going to happen this year, right? But you want to help out these young guys next year? These young hitters? Give them a good rotation. Give them a good bullpen. Right? Games like last night, here's should be the goal. To add in that last night's game in a perfect world here. If the Royals jump out 4-0 next year in a game like this and you're dominating, you win the damn game. It doesn't matter who you play. You're not losing 9-6. You don't give up 9 unanswered runs. That needs to be fixed. Now, baseball is baseball. Anything can happen, right? But those are the type of problems, those losses, got to be fixable. And you can't go into the eighth inning like they did on Friday against Colorado, a Colorado team that averaged less than 4 runs per game, and give up 6. That has to end. That has to stop. You want to take a step forward? Get guys that can do that. Get you 3 outs. Bridge that gap. Give you a rotation. Give you 1 or 2 guys. You can trust them for 5 or 6. Those 6 innings, 3 runs, just a workhorse. Not saying you're going to find your James Shields in 2024. But, man, just find guys that have done it to help these guys. That, to me, is the next step in this evaluation process. You know what these guys are without any help. You do. They'll have their good stretches this year. They'll have their bad stretches. But you got to find guys that can be great ball players for a playoff contending team. Is that Vinny Pasquantino, Bobby Witt Jr., Nick Prado, MJ Melendez? If it is, if you firmly believe that, back it up by filling in the rest of those holes with big league ball players that can produce, that can contribute. Not saying it has to be a 6-year, $180 million contract. Not saying that. Like, I'm not hoping the Royals have a Javier Baez type of deal. But also what the Tigers did. As bad as the Tigers were where the Royals were at the same time 2 years ago, they signed Javi Baez and Eduardo Rodriguez to big-time deals. Eduardo Rodriguez has been very good. Baez, not so much. But it was showing the fan base, hey, we want to compete. We want to go out there and contend in the Central. I can respect that. And I want to see that this upcoming offseason for John Sherman and J.J. Piccolo. Don't be calling for their heads. Don't be calling for Matt Quatrero's heads when there's not a lot to work with this current team. Now, if they're completely quiet this offseason, which they very well could be, then I think that criticism, that lack of support, it's only going to double going into next year. I'd like to see the aggressiveness, be vocal about it, and that'll summarize our complete hour of Royals talk. Didn't expect it to be that way, but if you were annoyed by the Royals talk, don't worry. We'll have lots of NFL talk and NBA talk for the rest of the week. But there is Ray Charles, so it's time to go. That wraps up another edition of The Shift on 94.5 FM and 1510 AM ESPN Kansas City. I've been your host, Jack Johnson, alongside Marco Marquez. We'll talk to you tomorrow at 10 a.m. You take it easy, Kansas City.